Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game and the Game Nashville app. We're live on the Hiller, from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. Joining us now is Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin. Tim, appreciate you for spending some time with us. I know that it is a busy time of year for you. Just looking at Vanderbilt's schedule over the next few weeks, you know, we got Alabama this weekend, then Florida, who has been red hot, Arkansas to round out the regular season. I know this time of year, you know, you're kind of getting bumped and bruises. The injury bug might be starting to hit. The fatigue of the season is starting to set in. How do you keep your team motivated, knowing that there is still a whole lot of work to do with the rest of the season?
I just think you stay very centered on what's happening right now. I mean, we've got Georgia State tonight, and that's a regional opponent, and they're very good. They're fourth in the country in home runs, so you know, you just really have to be, in order to be consistent. We've been consistent. We're not special, but we're consistent when we show up. I think it's the ability just to get in the spot and apply yourself mentally and physically, and we've been able to do that, and that'll, again, be the challenge for tonight's game.
You currently hold the best record in the SEC. Do you keep that in mind now that you are have a few weeks left in the regular season? Do you think about the SEC regular season title, or is it just business as usual for you?
Yeah, no, don't really think about that. I mean, your record is your past. I think the most important thing is how you evolve and how you develop and how you progress as a group. And I think the big part of what we've been able to do is what I mentioned just a little bit earlier. It's just very staying centered and localized on what you're doing. And that's, you know, it really is the best way to handle anything that these guys are doing, because they've got a lot on their plate right now. They've got exams. They have projects they have to turn in. So last exam or week of exams. So there's a lot that way and not a lot of free time in terms of what they have to do. So when they're here, they're just very specialized on what they have to do. We don't try to put too much on their plate. I don't want them to think too much about what they have to do. It's more about just getting in this environment and applying themselves.
We're talking with Vanderbilt's head baseball coach, Tim Corbin. Now, Coach, how have you and your pitchers had to adjust? And I know you guys have been doing it for a while, the clock and getting up there and having a pitch. The MLB has changed their timing for the pitcher to pitch. It's like get back on the mound and pitch. Do you explain that to your guys, your pitchers? Like get back on the mound, let's get going, get into a rhythm?
Well, I think we work with a pretty good pace anyway. You mentioned it. I think we've always gotten the ball and gotten the sign and moved forward. We were one of the first schools to use the wristband system, which basically allows the pitching coach to get the sign in really quick to the catcher and get the sign to the pitcher. It's just easier to play defense behind someone that's working quick. It allows everyone to play in rhythm for the most part. And it's one way you can put pressure on the hitter, too, especially if you're working quicker and you're throwing strikes. So we've always done that. I don't think the clock has affected us too much. We certainly had to be educated to it because it was new, and certainly the major league clock is a little bit faster than ours. But I think the reality is everyone's calibrated themselves towards it now, and it's much better. There's not a lot of balls being called or strikes being called on the hitters because they're not in the batter's box. I think the game has moved along. It's for the benefit of the game, too. I mean, the game's not a lot of fun when it's 3 hours, 3.5 hours to watch. If the game can be played within a two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour time period, I think that's really good for the consumer, and it's great for the players, too, because you get them off their legs, and you think you're playing 70 games in a season, and you can take 15, 20, a half-hour off of every game. That's less time on the field for them, and I think it helps them from a health standpoint.
Now, you got a good mixture of, you know, sophomores, freshmen, seniors, juniors, but you only have two graduate players on your team, one in particular, R.J. Schrick, who we had on a few weeks. What has he brought to your locker room, to your bullpen? not necessarily bullpen, but the locker room. And
he almost ran into the bullpen exactly. a couple weeks ago. A couple times.
Yes, but what does he bring to your team coming from another team, another successful program in Duke?
Confidence. I think when you get a fifth-year player who's pretty good, he had a very good career at Duke. He was a walk-on player, and we had a history with him. I mean, we recruited him, and I think anytime you take on a new player, especially someone who's coming into your program who's got 1 year, the likelihood is you're bringing him in because you think that he can fit into your lineup or have an impact in your lineup, which if that's the case, he's going to take space away from someone else. So I think the first thing is having a great sense of humility, because which a lot of young males have no sense of what that means because they're typically tied up in what they're doing. But if you've got a kid that is very knowing of other people and blends his personality into the group, then that person has a chance to be celebrated by the group, but also be a factor himself. And he has been. And I think his background inside the game, playing in super regionals, playing in regionals, being a good hitter, has a good acumen for the game. And I think he's been a good teacher, you know, ever since he's gotten on the field early in the fall too. Even him being new, his personality is such where he's blended well with the kids, he's blended well with the coaching staff, he's low maintenance kid. As I said, he's got a good acumen for the game, and he's really added a lot to our lineup. I mean, you take him out, you're missing some power numbers, some hit numbers, some RBI numbers, and certainly the confidence that he brings your team.
Tim Corbin is with us, and Tim, I got a chance to see the game on Sunday. It was such a fun game from a lot of angles, but one I want to ask you about, Alan Espinal, backup catcher. This always dawns on me as a great team moment. He gets the game-winning hit. Doesn't start every game, but you can tell he's put in the work, how much the teammates like him, and they just mobbed him like he'd won a regional or something, but that just shows you, it just tells me without knowing him personally that he's doing a lot of good work back there.
That's right. I mean, you can see that. I mean, I think when you spend your whole life celebrating other people, then when your time comes back around to you, then it's very easy for people to celebrate him. And that he's served a team role in such a special way. This is a young guy who really had to work to get into school here. I mean, he comes from a Spanish-speaking family from Puerto Rico. His siblings speak English. But the parents do not. He taught himself how to speak English by watching cartoons on TV. That's a true story. And he did it in a matter of 1 year. But he's just a special kid. I mean, I mentioned the other day after the game's over, it's like this kid's in the batting cages every morning, not selective mornings. It's every day that ends in Y, which is every day. He's in the batting cage. And he's hitting, and he's getting better at his craft. And that's hard to do sometimes when you're not playing all the time, but it's never slowed him up. His personality stays the same. He's consistent. He's low maintenance. He knocks on my door every day. It's a loud knock. And regardless of what I'm doing, whether I'm on the phone or whether it's the computer, all he wants to do is come in here and he fist bumps me and then he leaves. And that's it. So he's got good awareness and feel for other people, but he's got a high amount of energy. And there's not too many kids like this guy.
You've had a lot of great pitchers, needless to say. I was really watching Devin Futrell closely, and the more I watch him pitch, his changeup is just so good. So how does he develop that? I mean, most pitchers now, you have to have some kind of off-speed pitch. You need that third pitch to survive in the league. But, man, his is exceptional.
It is. It's kind of why we recruited him. We saw that as a ninth grader, and he was tall and thin and wasn't throwing with a lot of velocity. I think he was throwing in the low 80s when we recruited him, but we liked his ability to pitch. And I think in a day and age where pitchers chase so much velocity, and because of that, it becomes less pitching and more overpowering and more injury too, as you can see, both at this level and the major league level, that it's almost refreshing to find someone that can change speeds and decelerate the baseball, and he can do that. He's not void of throwing a good fastball because his fastball spins really well, and actually, you know, it's an 89, 90-mile-an-hour fastball that probably appears because of the changeup and because of his other off-speed offerings, it seems to spin a little bit better, and it's tough for the hitter to pick up. But to your point, I mean, he's one of those guys who can throw the changeup, and he likes it, and he's very skilled at doing it. He's very skilled at everything on the mound. He can hold runners, can field his position. He's got a good acumen for the game. He's a baseball player that pitches.
Derek asked you about the pitch clock, and a lot of us watching Major League Baseball, if you'd watched the sounds last year, you got a little feel for where it was going to be, but for a lot of people who only cover Major League Baseball, it's still pretty new, the players for sure. Well, what do you think, if you pick a Major League Baseball game that you're watching, do you think it's having the effect that it's supposed to with the non-shifts beyond just the clock?
Yeah, I do. I think it brings more harmony to the game. I think, you know, at first the clock is, you know, for an older baseball person, they may just like saying there's no way you can bring a clock into baseball. Well, if it's applied properly, you can. And basically the clock will not be a factor in time because people will play at a certain speed. I mean, the way the college game was being played, at least in the last couple of years, it made me want to vomit. You know, you can't sit there and watch a game that's a college game, you know, for 3 and 3.5 hours, especially if it's 50, 40 degrees. People don't have that attention span, let alone kids. So if you want to speed something up and get through a game, it just makes sense that you take out the dead time. And the dead time is hitters coming up to a walk-up song, jacking around with their gloves, you know, their batting gloves, and slow getting the box. No one wants to see a practice swing. I mean, that's gross. And then, you know, the pitch taking their time. I think just taking out those dead moments, just watching the guys play, you know, just get to the action. Let's just see the action. I don't want to see what's going on in between. Let's just get to the action so we can see what's being played.
Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin, appreciate you for joining us. Good luck against Georgia State tonight.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. Chat soon. Coming up next, I know it's fun, but sometimes something's got to give. We'll explain. Coming up next, Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Timo Meier. Oh, blasted by Trouba and not getting up. Another one of those big hits by Trouba. And Meyer is still flat on his back on the ice.
A couple of games ago, Meyer got hit like this at the blue line by Braden Schneider. He was able to bounce off the check. The difference in weight and force of this hit changes the outcome. Look, Trouba's coming off the bench, so Meyer doesn't see him. The door of the Ranger bench is open.
There was a call last night in the Rangers-Devils game. Devils ultimately win it in Game 7. They win the series. Smoked them last night 4-0. But that was a call last night on a big hit from the Rangers' Trouba on the Devils' Meyer. And Meyer's laying on the ice, hardly moving. And you can see whenever they slow the hit down that Meyer is like on his side and basically writhing in pain. And how many times has this happened so far in the Stanley Cup playoffs? We're only through one round.
Too many.
Like five? Three? Okay, three from Knicks counting. That's too many in one round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I know hockey's a rough sport. Any of this, football, hockey, like, they're all rough contact sports. I get that. It's coming to a certain point for me where the NHL has to stand in here and say, look, we have to at least draw the line somewhere of what is too far. Some of these teams' top players are going down likely for the entirety of the playoffs with concussions or whatever else kind of injury that's being incurred from these hits. I think the NHL has to stand for it because the playoffs are, one, just a lot less interesting and a lot less fun when some of these teams' top players are out for the entirety of the playoffs. And two, it's just hard to watch at this point.
It is hard. I just think when you watch that, the debate starts about whether the hit, in fact, is legal or not. And by most counts, and even in the moment, Dave Jackson, the rules analyst, the former referee, came on and said it's a legal hit. I just find it hard to believe. Now, for the Devils, first of all, amazing win. I mean, they have shocked their arch. I mean, they hate the Rangers.
And the
Rangers
went for it to make a run in the playoffs.
They are glitz and glamour. They have 10 times the fan base of You saw the Rangers had a ton of fans in New Jersey's building for all the home games there.
Mm-hmm. Rangers are the Yankees, and the Devils are like the Oakland A's.
Yep, absolutely. So you want to talk about satisfaction to beat them in Game 7 and watch them file out of the building. They were going nuts. But and the other good thing for the Devils, there's at least some hope that Meyer didn't suffer the bad concussion, that maybe he'll pass the protocols. I mean, we'll have to see. It sometimes it doesn't hit you for a day or two, right? All the symptoms.
Right.
So we'll see. But the fact remains, like, mm-hmm. Derek, you've seen, we've had this discussion before.
Mm-hmm.
Football went through this, right? There were times where a guy would get crushed in the open field. I can remember James Harrison being one. There was a big debate. And they determined that it was legal. But at a certain point, they determined, look, it has been legal, but we're going to legislate these hits out. We just don't want any more of these hits. Too many guys are getting hurt. And I think hockey, to me, they've got to reassess. It's time with some of these hits. They are legal. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll buy that. But let's not act like I think the play, like you said before, I think the players need a voice in this. They need to come up and say, okay, we don't want these hits in the game. You can't light a guy up in the middle of the ice, legal or not. It's tough, but I think we've got to, there's nothing you can do this year, but I think at the end of the season, we need to have a better discussion about this.
I think it has to be something that, you know, the players' union sit down and they seriously talk about. Because I think you almost have to approach it from this standpoint, because I think it's so embedded in hockey.
Especially playoff, you know, hockey.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, this is just a part of what we do. And I get it. I mean, I understand it, even though I never played hockey. But I get, you know, it being one way for a long time in a sport, and then, you know, either it changing, you trying to figure out how to adapt to it, or you giving pushback to that change. So I get that. But I think it has to be a situation where, you know, player reps and player presidents, and they got to get together, because this is not about the owners and the head coaches. This has nothing to do with them, because because they're not going to change it, because their thing is this is part of the product and it brings eyes to the ice and put butts in the arena. So we ain't going to change it. We're good. We ain't out there playing. We're not out there getting our head bashed in. I'm talking about the owners. We're not out there getting all that. So
it puts butts in seats.
Exactly. Well, we love it. But I think this is where the players step in. It's like, listen, I understand that this is the way it used to be. But moving forward, if y'all want to have long careers, because this sport has gotten bigger, faster, stronger, more skilled. If y'all want to have long careers, then these hits, where they may be legal, yes, but these hits have the ability to take somebody completely out. And I'm not just talking about for the game. I'm talking about for their career.
I was really worried that
and
Meyer
that could
was,
be you.
I thought he was completely out cold. I was worried the stretcher was going to
like
come
it.
Out.
Mm-hmm.
I really
and I think that's
impactful.
What the, that's what the NFL. It wasn't the owners that, oh, let's take these big hits out. It was the players that eventually said, no, we can't have this. Like, these concussions and all that other stuff, y'all been hiding this for so long. We can't expect y'all to change it. We gotta be the voice of change, and then it get changed. The owners in the NHL are not gonna do anything about it. It's the players. If they want this change, their voice will get it changed. Because if not, then we're gonna look back 10, 15 years, even probably now you can see it, where guys start having these same issues that NFL guys have. And I'm not saying that NHL guys haven't, because I've heard of stories that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So if that is indeed the case, players, we need to legislate this. This has nothing to do with the owners. We need to legislate this and get things in place where we're going to play hard, we're going to play physical, we're going to play fast. But we're not in the business of ending people's career. The NFL did it, and look at them. Their product has not suffered, not one bit.
It does. It's astonishing looking back at football 25, 30 years ago, how different it was and how then it was probably unimaginable. How there wouldn't be, you know, tough hits right to the head like that. Mike has a thought. Is that on the line? Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. What's up, Mike?
Hey, sorry to disagree with y'all. He skated into the zone across the blue line looking down at the ice. Any one of the into three or four players, any one of those guys was going to do that to him. He's got to have his head up to protect himself.
That's the old school. That is the old school take.
And that you can't have that.
It's absolutely true. But again, I'm asking the question: do you want those hits in your game?
Do you want to protect?
Yeah.
Each other.
Yeah, I get it. The guy. I mean, his head was not down. By the way, his head was up. He saw Trouba. I do think that the keep your head up is what the old school guard always says, and that's absolutely true. And Trouba is really good at delivering the legal hits. I mean, he is the master of it. He is known for it, for sure. But it's just, when Trouba is going in for that hit, look, I'm not a mind reader, but it just looks to me like there is full throttle. I'm not just making a play. I am going in for the hardest absolute hit I can make to. And not, I'm not saying he's trying to, quote, put him out of the game. He is going for full impact. And hockey has evolved. Like, I could show you a bunch of clips from Jordan Tutu, and the crowd went wild. It was unbelievable what he used
to do.
Rough.
And that was not that long ago.
Right. And it's evolved a lot from then. There's less of them than there used to be. But in the playoffs, it's kind of like it's ratcheted back up. So I again ask the question. It's legal. But is this what you want in the game?
See, I know we got to go to break quickly. I just, from a former player's perspective, you just care about the player. See, fans, they only care about you really when you're playing. The minute you leave that team, they don't particularly care that much. They're not following you like that. But when you retire, they forget about you. That's just the truth. They forget about you. They're not wondering, man, did those hits he was taking, did that take a toll on his? I wonder what his life is like now. Fans don't think about that.
Unless it's in front of your face.
Exactly, unless you see it every day.
Like Antonio Brown, for example.
Exactly.
I think there are a lot of people that are very concerned about maybe hits that he may have withstood when he was in the league, which has maybe led to some of the things that he unfortunately has been in headlines for.
Exactly. So as a former player, I feel for those guys. It's like, yeah, that was a legal hit. But that hit shouldn't be in this sport, just like football. A lot of those hits were legal. But the players came to realization that shouldn't be in the sport because it's not about, you know, what we do on Sundays for X how many years. Mm-hmm. It's the life that we got to live after that.
We're right back into your phones coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. If you're running out of ideas for Mother's Day gifts, do not sweat it. You can tune in to Robbie and Rex Road all week long for your chance to win a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Day Spa. Winners will be put in a grand prize drawing for a $1,000 gift card and a pair of tickets to see Dave Matthews Band at Bridgestone Arena on May 26th. The people have some thoughts.
Let's hear them.
To the phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in about the discussion we were having last segment about some of the hits that we've seen in the National Hockey League over the last few weeks as the as round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs is kicking off. One texter says, but I understand your line of thinking, but this is just how the sport is, and this is what people want to see. I feel like the thought of, well, this is how it's always been. If we always thought that about everything, the world we live in would be a whole lot less fun and a whole lot different than it is now. At some point, you have to take off the cap of, well, this is how we've always done things and think about, well, yeah, this is how we've always done it, but how much better can the game be if we make some tweaks?
See,
and safer, right?
And safer.
I mean, you're not going to make it totally safe. The players want aggressiveness. They want physicality. But, I mean, if we could take the concussions down 15-20%, that's a good trade-off. That's a good thing, I think, without sacrificing the competition.
I mean, listen, for so many years, the fans or whatnot, no, don't change the game. This is what we love seeing in the NFL. We love seeing big hits. We love seeing all this other stuff. And we ain't watching it if y'all do this and do that. Well, the NFL players, along with the NFL, but it started with the players, said, listen, some of these things are changing. We need to change. This sport has gotten too fast, too big, too physical. We can't play the game the way we used to play it. If we do, then those quarterbacks that you come out and see, they won't be there every week. That running back that you see won't be there every week. That wide receiver that goes across the middle 9 times out of 10 that you love and rave over, he won't be here for long. So we got to change, and we will change the rules. And at first, everyone, oh, I don't want to watch the NFL no more. This is a pillowcase league. Look how they laying down the quarterbacks. And what happens? You still watch it.
Yes, of
you
course.
Still watch it.
What else are we going to do?
Some people are, it's like when you see, when you hear change or you feel change or you see change, you sort of want to fight against it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, if you just look at the big picture in situations like this, it's better for the game if they get rid of some of this stuff, because the players that you love get to play longer. That's what the NFL, when it was brought to the NFL, it was like, okay, you're right. We can have our quarterbacks playing a lot longer now. Mm-hmm. Okay, don't you lay your hands on our quarterbacks no more.
I'm not going to be seeing stars after
exactly.
every hit anymore.
So
it's kind of nice.
That old school thinking, I mean, like you said, Caroline, if the world was ran that way, then I can't say it would be a good world right now.
Okay, Derek, I'm going to give you something else to think about here too, because growing up and being coached as a young hockey player, I think personally it comes a lot on the coaches too, because if you have coaches that want the betterment, let's say that they're having the same mindset as all four of us with this argument, I think it's how you teach these young kids. I had checking clinics for 2 years as a young kid here. If you teach kids, and they do the same thing in football and most sports, how to play physically and doing it safely. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was hurt when I was learning how to check kids. And so you can learn how to do it the wrong way too when you don't understand something. So it is very dangerous. The Trouba hit is no exception to how dangerous hockey is. I also think if you want to see the sport change, and I just called games over the weekend where kids were just as physical with that mindset as Trouba was last night, except they're not going to lay into you when you come across the blue line and try to dump the puck in, because Meyer was in a very vulnerable spot regardless of whatever he decided to do with the puck in that situation. If you teach kids how to look up and make a play, I think that's going to make a big difference. And I think anyone else that wants to weigh in on it, whether it's a call or a text, whatever it is, or if you're a parent that's listening that has kids that are wanting to play physical sports, it's on the coaches too, and it's on how you approach going about being physical in your respective sport.
Yeah, and hockey must realize, and I'm sure they do, that, listen, Nick, you are right. It's not going to change in the NHL unless it changed in the levels below them, because those little kids will be NHLers in 10, 15 years, you know, probably earlier than that. So what they're learning and how they learn how to play the game will translate and transcend into the NHL. So if you've been taught to be physical and hit guys when they're not looking and try to take the kill shot every time, if you're taught that when you're younger, which a lot of these guys probably were taught, then that's what you're going to take into the NHL. But if you were taught, play the game, you know, not necessarily in a finesse way, but play the game within a way where, yes, I'm doing my job, but I'm not out there trying to hurt people. Like, if I got that clean shot, then maybe I'm not going to take it the way I used to take it, because now I've been taught different. I've been taught a better way, just like tackling. These younger kids are taught differently how to tackle than what I was. It was get up, do the Oklahoma drill, run into guys, and go forward. And I head up. And I think about it, and my hair hurts now. But these guys are taught, these younger guys are taught different now. And it's, you're seeing it in the NFL now because they were taught 10 years ago how to tackle and play aggressive but not hurt someone. Well, you're seeing it in the NFL now. So it can happen in hockey. Don't make it seem like, oh, this is the way the sport has been forever. It can't change. People don't. If it changes, people are not going to love it. No. If it changes, people are going to adapt to it. And they're going to continue to love hockey no matter what.
And it's simultaneously a trickle-down and trickle-up effect from the highest level, football, hockey, whatever it is, to the youth level. Once the highest level, once the professionals start to change the rules, then that's how the young kids are taught. And when the young kids are taught that way, then they ultimately become professionals that play the game that way. And that's how the game evolves over time. The changes in the NFL weren't made overnight.
No.
It wasn't like one Sunday you could go right for the head and the next Sunday it was, oh, this thing's called targeting and now you can't do it. It has evolved over time and now it's just basically ingrained in all of us. You see a shot to the head, that's targeting, you're out. It's basically, it just changes the way we watch, it changes the way you play, it changes the way you learn the game.
And please, I hope no hockey enthusiasts take offense to what I'm about to say. And please, the Predators, don't take offense to it either. But when people come on and they say things like our callers and texters were saying, like, this is just the way the sport is and this and that and that. And that. So you think your sport is that special that it can't change? If that was the case, well, football wouldn't have changed, you know. Basketball wouldn't have changed. Baseball, they started changing some of the things that they're doing because they understand it's a different sport now.
Yeah, you had baseball people adamantly saying, oh, you can't have a clock in baseball. You cannot have a clock in baseball.
Well, but now they have one.
They got one.
So,
and it's actually not that bad.
Exactly. So don't think your sport is that special. And I love hockey. I've come to love hockey. Like, I grew up around it in Detroit, but I've come to have a greater appreciation for it now because we have a team and we follow them and I get to talk to the coaches and guys, so I get a greater appreciation for the guys now. But don't, fans, don't think your sport is that special that you can't change.
Anything can change.
Exactly.
615-7.
I'm thinking of Rocky IV. If you can change, we can change.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The draft grades are in. But how much does it really matter? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D-Maze, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline Willie, D-Maze, 1025, 1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Willie, the draft is over.
Thank goodness.
But the draft grades are in. But before we go through the draft grades, can we establish something? How much do we think it matters? Like, how much do we care about the draft grades?
Right now, we don't care. I don't see how you can. Other than to, it's something fun to do.
Yeah.
And sort of break down, if you're a fan, sort of break down your draft. You're like, oh, wait, yeah, we got this guy. Mm-hmm. But you won't know. I mean, and Willie said this several times. You won't know until 2-3 years down the line how good this class was or is. But I think what you can do is say, okay, they filled some needs. And whether we like the Titans draft or didn't like it or dislike it or whatnot, I think they addressed some of their needs. They didn't address all of them, but they addressed some of them. And some they addressed that they still have to address. The receiver position, they addressed it in the seventh round. And I heard Mike on Chasing Maciel earlier saying while they like the guy that they drafted, big, physical, fast, a guy they believe can come in here and contribute, developmental type of player. So, well, we may think, well, they should have added some more receivers, but they did sort of address offensively just about every area that we thought going into the draft, these are the areas of need for the Tennessee Titans.
I might surprise you with my answer. I do look at the grades. And I find it interesting. Like, to me, the Will Levis pick has been pretty heavily criticized amongst Titans fans, even right. some of the local media, some more than others, some of just, I just don't like this at all, etc. But of course, the perception of SEC fans, we think that plays into it, right?
Probably a little bit, yep.
But almost to a person who of the graders who we look at, you know, The Athletic, ESPN, mm-hmm. Pro Football, you know, there's, you go down the list, at least the ones I look at, it's almost straight A's for Will Levis, right, yeah. for that particular pick, and pretty good grades for the draft overall. So I take note of that. But I will say this. I can't tell you a single grade that I remember from even last year's draft. I don't remember. Did they get good grades for last year's draft? I don't remember.
I have
and so, I like let's say Isaiah Wilson, right? I have no idea what the grades were for Isaiah Wilson the day or two after the pick. But I'm sure the freezing cold takes, mm-hmm. you can probably find some pretty ridiculous A grades or F grades for something that does not match up in the years to come, right? That, I think before the draft it was funny. Somebody put out a thread of some video clips or some articles about some just absolutely 100% wrong takes on players right after they were picked. Right? It was really
Patrick
funny.
Patrick Mahomes got like a C minus.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can cherry pick and right. you can always find that one guy. Even if 10 other people said, "Hey, really good pick, Patrick Mahomes," you can find the one guy saying, "He'll never be a starter. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he doesn't like his mom. You know, there's something." But there's always that person that wants to go way out on the limb
right.
with one of these takes. And I feel like that's happening some with Levis. And it's like, okay, well, let's just find out.
One way or another, like Mel Kiper is standing up on his soapbox.
He's going to look really good or really bad.
He wants to adopt Will Levis, is what does. It sounds like. Yeah. But I could not give one single flying flip about some of these draft grades. And I will explain why. First of all, the Titans have been getting straight A's across the board for this year's draft as a whole and also for the Will Levis pick. The people that are grading the pick are also the same people that were grading Will Levis as a first-round talent. Mm-hmm. The same people that were mocking Will Levis to go second, third, fourth, fifth overall. Yeah. So they're looking at it like, well, the Titans got Will Levis at 33. What great value the Titans got. So A's across the board. I expected that. D-Mace, when we were doing our draft show on Friday night, mm-hmm. I said, I think Will Levis is going to be perceived as the steal of the draft. Mm-hmm. A projected top five quarterback that you get in the second round. That's kind of the label that you're going to get. At this point, you know, the grades don't matter because what matters is what they do on the field. Mm-hmm. You bring up Isaiah Wilson. The Titans for the 2020 draft got a B-, and this is from NFL.com. I'll use the same okay. NFL.com grading for all of these years. Oh, excuse me, overall grade for 2020, B+. This is who the Titans drafted in 2020. Isaiah Wilson, F. Christian Fulton, you know, he's been a starter.
It's a D.
It's
a D. Well,
I say a C. I was thinking of
B minus at least.
It's a C+.
He's a consistent starter if he's healthy.
Yes.
Darrington Evans, Laurel Murchison, Cole McDonald, Chris Jackson. That is a
Cole McDonald.
That
is
a D- draft class that got a B+ the day after the draft.
Right.
2021, B+. Caleb Farley, Dylan Radins, Monty Rice, Elijah Molden, who's a good player but always hurt, Dez Fitzpatrick, Rashad Weaver, who's a good player, Reese McMath, and Brady Breeze, who I don't even think is on the team anymore. I think he got cut pretty
quick.
That's
another D.
That is another bad draft.
Yeah.
So I and the Titans got
and I'm
an
sure
A.
We could find some opposite ones too where they
totally.
Got I mean go pick
bad
a year
grades,
yeah bad
that
grades
ends
but
up
a good
being
draft
good.
Class. Yeah.
Last year the draft class got an A. I think you know we're still kind of deciding mm-hmm. what that draft class is ultimately going to turn into. It looks very promising. But looking at 2021 and 2020 that I think we all feel very confident in saying those were bad drafts. Were graded by the experts and the insiders as being good drafts at the time. So I'm just saying, while you're looking at the draft classes, you know these players could end up being an A+ draft class. Mm-hmm. Totally. Will Levis could be a Super Bowl champion, a Super Bowl MVP, and he does live up to the hype. He could also not. Mm-hmm. So that's just my soapbox of don't worry about the draft grades. Worry about what they do on the field. Tajay Spears, for example, got bad grades.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Saints fans are canceling their season tickets because they didn't draft Tajay Spears. I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
I got a C on my fantasy football draft right after the draft was over. I was really ticked off. Yeah. I finished second I almost won the whole thing. I came within, you know, and I'm not going to make excuses, but of course the game between the Bills and the Bengals threw everything off, you know, had to reschedule and everything. You know, I wonder what might have been. But yes. I did not get a C on my draft, okay? I had a good draft. I got to the finals.
Yeah, well, like Ricky Bobby say, if you ain't first, you last.
So Yahoo, you need to look at what I do in the draft. I know what I'm doing in these fantasy drafts, okay?
But I mean, I was listening to the station. Was this late yesterday? It might have been late yesterday after Jared had went off. And I forgot who was on. But they were talking to Mel Kiper. And they were
Will Levis fan club.
Yeah. But they were asking him just about the draft in general. And he said, well, you know, McShay and I have talked, and we kind of went over both of our, you know, mock drafts and all this other stuff, and then what teams did. He said, but for the most part, I think if you look at every NFL team, they did a good job at drafting. If you look at every NFL team, you know, now fans may not like some of, you know, oh, why you draft that guy? Why you wait to draft? Fans are going to do that. We're going to do that.
Right.
But I guess once you sit down and sort of look at what your team did, you sort of put it on a big piece of paper and what your team did based on what your needs were, you will find that, you know, right now you think the Titans did well. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's an A or an F, I mean, an A or C, but it seemed like they did well because they addressed things that they needed to address with players that they feel can help this ball club. And it seems like they've gotten that, like every other NFL has gotten that way as well.
That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on somebody. Peace.